welcome to the Big Three Podcast, a weekly podcast from Guymie Baptist Church, where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. Because we believe that one of the spaces where faith can grow is in those small conversations about the big topics. Well, hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to another week of the Big Three. My name's Matt Willis and I'm here with Jess Baker. How you going, my friend?
Hello. It's been a hot sec.
It has been. We've had a little break from the Big Three.
We just smoke bombed existence and I apologize to our avid listeners.
We do apologize. We just kept submitting those extension requests for leave and they just kept getting approved.
I mean, yeah, we just disappeared.
It was meant to be a couple of weeks off. It's been a couple of months.
So I'm sorry that we've been missing from your ear holes. We're back.
But we're back and we're excited to be back.
We are.
And what a time to be back. We've started a new series just this past Sunday, The Courageous Life. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, Jess, to kick us off, when you think of courage, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Picture this.
Okay.
The Black Gate before us.
Lord of the Rings. Yeah, Lord of the Rings.
Legolas, Gimli, Gandalf. Know they're going to die, certain death, but they got to get those orcs out of Mordor.
They do.
They're making a beeline for Mount Doom. Aragorn does his speech, but it is not this day. Courage.
That is, wow. Mm-mm. Wow. I also had a movie reference. Probably not as monumental as yours, or I dare say well known.
Can you top it?
I don't think I can. But I thought of the first thing that came into my mind was that that movie Cliffhanger. I think it's Sylvester Stallone, and the opening scene is like someone's rope breaks and he's kind of got to get out there to save them and he's trying to get there. Unfortunately, not the happy ending that Lord of the Rings got. He did not get there in time.
Yeah.
You know, and then the plot line just, you know, progressed. But that's, you know, there was courage still. Mm. He failed, but there was courage to get out there. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Never courage that I will display myself.
Never.
No.
I mean, you
nice
love a good speech, though.
I do love a good speech.
You could give an Aragorn speech.
Not as good. It's not the best speech in the movie, to be honest. Samwise takes the cake on that. Oh, beautiful.
Bless him.
Fucks in those stories. I can't. Can you tell I'm listening to the audiobook with Andy Serkis right now?
I think I can.
Yeah, it's a good time. It is a good time. Anyway, Jesus.
Jesus. The Big Three, the podcast. Like I said, we started a new series, The Courageous Life, in our services this past Sunday. Mark Rader launched that for us
this week. Well and good.
It was, and what a launch it was. He did a first person narrative, sharing reflecting on the story of Esther. He was not Esther, although.
No, I would have loved that. I was really disappointed.
I think he'd look great in a dress.
I think so. I was, and also kind of upset he didn't just put on the VeggieTales movie.
Oh.
Sorry about that, Mark. I know you prepped. You spent a lot of time.
Instead, he assumed the role of a royal advisor and reflected on the courage that Esther displayed as she kind of spoke on behalf of her people and went to, what a girl indeed. Mm-hmm. Like, talk about I bet she had a power suit as well. Like, she just strut into that place, that royal room, and was like, I got things to say. But it was a great start. And for anyone who wants to listen to that, strongly recommend you can head to our GBC sermon podcast, listen to that and any sermon podcast from GBC. Do recommend. So we want to, you know, Big Three, our whole purpose is that we want to see the lessons continue from the sermon. We don't believe that the learning stops on a Sunday. And so we want to get Mark in here and ask him some questions that came out of his first person narrative that people from our community asked. So Jess, why don't we go through what those Big Three questions are for us today?
Question one is, how would you describe Esther's courage?
Yeah, fair enough.
Epic. Aragorn level.
Done. I bet you she had a speech.
Question two, what are your thoughts on discerning the difference between folly and courage?
Yeah, because that was a part of his kind of piece, wasn't it? He was like, you know, there's a fine line.
Mm-hmm. Not going to lie, I absolutely resonated with She Who Shall Not Be Named, Queen Voldemort. I absolutely would have done the same thing. And been killed by it. And question three, how can we manage the natural temptation to rationalize our inclination to avoid the risks of acting courageously.
Oh my gosh.
I got through that question.
Whoever asked that is one.
Is an intellectual.
Yeah. And their vocabulary is extensive.
Yeah, I got baby brain. It's going to take me a second to comprehend what that meant.
Thankfully, Mark will know what the question means and then he will answer it for us. So it seems only right that we get him on the big three. Welcome, Mark Rayner. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Matt. Hey, Jess. Good
Hello,
to see you guys.
Welcome back.
Yeah, it's nice to be back together.
The gang.
Oh, no, the gang. The three amigos. The three musketeers.
I like how you say the three.
I'm just excited, so I'm getting pitchy.
No, it's great to be back.
I'm glad to have you, particularly once we went through those questions because we weren't going to answer them.
No.
But Mark, before we get into the big three, the courageous life, I mean, why is this series on living courageously an important one for our church at the moment?
That's a good question. And for me, it's linked mostly to our purpose as a community of faith. So, you know, we've done a bunch of work on, you know, what we want to see. We want to see lives changed by Jesus. Mm. And we've done some work on kind of our mission within that, which is, you know, to invite everyone that we meet, everywhere we go and everything we do, to follow Jesus. But when it comes to our purpose, I think what we want to be doing is we want to be participating with God's plans in the world. And that requires courage. So our purpose statement, kind of in its official long form version, actually says that we want to courageously participate with God. 'Cause there's a recognition that, you know, okay, participating with God, he's invited us in. You're like, great. He sent us out. Fine. But then the moment comes when we have to show love or forgive or start the conversation or pray with or whatever it is. And we can sometimes lack some of that courage. So we felt that it would be appropriate to take some time to look at some of the characters, particularly in the Old Testament. That's just kind of the way it turned out more than anything else. But to look at some of the biblical characters who displayed courage in a variety of circumstances. So hopefully it'll help encourage us to be people of courage as we participate with what God's doing.
Yeah, awesome. Love that. Seems appropriate.
There we go. There you go. There is a plan.
There is a plan. We promise. All will come to light.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess there's nothing else to be said except let's get into the big three.
So, Mark, Esther's story is pretty epic. She seems like she is a bit hesitant at first. She gets everyone praying, which I think was quite nice, fasting and all that kind of stuff. But
it's very, very Christian.
It
very
is
biblical.
Very Christian, but also delightful that she was like, oh, this is big. Let's get the whole town fasting. Wise. How would you describe Esther's courage?
I mean, I think, you know, if I can be a stickler for detail, because that's kind of what I do.
They expect nothing less.
That's right. I think one of the fascinating parts of the story is that while we assume that they prayed, the text only says, go get the Jews to fast for me. Mm. It's one of the places where I think the narrator is signaling that he is deliberately not mentioning God. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why the book is famous. I mean, it's a great story, but it doesn't mention explicitly God's activity at all. You know, and I tried to draw some of those things out in the first part of the story. The fact that, you know, when Joseph wins the favor of a Potiphar and then of the jailer, we're explicitly told because God was with him. Same thing happens with Daniel. Like he won the favor of those who he encountered because the Lord was with him. In Esther, it's just, no, she just won the favor of people, but no reference to God. And you're like, okay, well, you know, beautiful woman, they tend to attract the fit, you know, the favor of people who see them. So fair enough. Maybe it was just that she was really beautiful and fine. But then there's just a number of places where you're like, yeah, I think this, he's doing this deliberately. Like the fact that the edict was signed the day before Jews would have been celebrating the Passover.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a little bit of a no-brainer to mention the great act of salvation when they need a great act of salvation. Mm. But he doesn't do that. And when they call the Jews together, they fast. And you're like, and nope, just fast. You're like, seriously?
We just want you hungry.
Yeah. You know,
for no particular reason whatsoever.
You're about to die, so suffer a bit more.
So, like, and it carries on the rest of the book, right? So the king, that kind of famous the famous turning point when the king can't sleep and Haman is coming in the middle of the night to hang Mordecai early instead of waiting for the 12th month. Mm. And the king can't sleep, and so he decides to read the record of his reign because that's such a boring king that that'll put him to sleep, right? You know, and they pick the passage that had where Mordecai hadn't been rewarded. Like, all of those coincidences, God is not mentioned once.
Yeah.
And so by the end of the book, you're kind of rolling your eyes as a reader of scripture, kind of going, come on, just mention God. And I think that is where I would want to describe Esther's courage, because I think the deliberate nature of not mentioning God, right? You say that she probably had a great speech in her. The book of Esther was one of the most popular books of Jews of the dispersion, so Jews that weren't living in the Jewish province in the Persian Empire. So we have, I think, more manuscript copies of the book of Esther than we do of any other part of scripture outside of the Pentateuch, like the Torah and the law.
Oh, wow.
So it was like radically popular. And in the Greek edition, they actually added all sorts of speeches and prayers and stuff. Like, God was obviously involved, so we're going to name him.
We're just going to add him in.
And there's this great kind of Days of Our Lives scene when she goes to the king, which makes it really explicit. Like, she goes to the king and she's kind of faint because she hasn't eaten for 3 days and comes in and she's just looking glorious, apparently. And the king sees her and
if not hungry.
And the king is enraged that she's come in and he stands and she's like, oh, I'm going to die. And she faints. And then the Lord changes his heart and he leaps off the throne and catches her in his arms. And
says,
oh, yeah.
Yes, like, this is like sand through an hourglass.
It is.
Why didn't you enact that? I'm bummed.
It's next level. So, but they've kind of added all those explicit bits to it. But I actually think the power of the story is found in the experience that most of us have, which is we don't see the explicit hand of God in the moment.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, unless there's the angel, unless there's the narrator in our life and saying, and then the Lord answered Jess's prayer, even though she didn't see it.
Mm.
You know, like, unless you have that really obvious, explicit, you know, burning bush, angelic visitation, a prophetic word, something where you kind of go, oh, that's God. We're left to just assume that God's at work.
Yeah.
And it is that we often look back, you know, like when I tell my story of how I, you know, got into ministry and the things that have happened in my life, I look back and I see God's fingerprints all over it.
Mm.
But in the moment, there was very much more than one moment of who knows?
Yeah.
Like, I think this is what God's leading me to. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, I've got a sense of peace about this decision, or, you know, I've talked to lots of my believing friends and they've been praying about it and I've been praying about it and we've talked about it and it seems like the wise thing to do. But at the end of the day, if he kind of pushed me and said, is God in this? I would have had to say, who knows?
Mm.
I've got reasons to believe, but I guess I'm going to have to wait and see. And so I think that's the power of Esther's courage, that she basically she's walking by faith, not by sight.
Mm.
She's basically saying, by her actions, I believe that God is active in the world.
Yeah.
And that the things that might be construed as coincidences and accidents, things that might be construed as God's favor, are actually God's favor God's plan and God's leading.
Mm.
And so I'm going to act like that's true,
mm.
which I think then becomes a really good practice for us.
Mm.
You know, okay, we believe God sent us and not just sent us out to kind of find some work, but that he's already at work. Like, wherever we go, God's already at work.
Mm.
So when there's an opportunity with our neighbor or our colleague or our friend to have that conversation of faith, part of our act of courage is to say, God's been at work in their life. Can I see it? Can I give you categorical evidence that that's the case? No. I'm left with the same thing that Mordecai said, right? Who knows? Who knows? But that this is the moment when something really happens, when that seed germinates and starts to grow in their life, you know, whatever it is, you kind of go, okay, well, who knows? I'm going to act like God's at work and step into it. So that's the power of her courage.
That makes her even cooler.
It really does. I've never thought of Esther's story as being, and the fact that God isn't mentioned, like, we just kind of go, oh, they were just trying to be different. I don't know, like, tricky. Like, yeah. But the fact that, well, that's actually, I guess, a truer reflection of our everyday experience that there is uncertainty, that it's like, oh, I guess I do just have to step out with courageous faith because I'm not getting that overt answer that, yes, this is it, and yes, this is what I want, and yes, this is what you should do. Mm. Like, we're always faced with that yes, but maybe kind of question.
And the stakes just aren't as high for us as Esther walking in.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm constantly finding myself in the middle of political conversations that determine, you know, genocide.
And, you know, again, like, it's a beautifully told story as well. Like, you know, they had 12 months. They probably could have followed other procedures. Like, apparently, we have extra biblical evidence that that was actually a rule of the court, to just show up uninvited was to bring death unless the golden scepter. But you could also request an audience, right? You know, kind of in triplicate, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you know, they'd slot you in somewhere kind of thing. So there were other options, but this just kind of heightens the drama of it, which I think is brilliant. But it also just really, like, it just resonates. Like, when I, you know, after I'd done a whole bunch of study of the book, I was like, that really resonates with my life. You know, to your point, Jess, rarely are my decisions so big.
Monumental.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, if this doesn't work, I'm dead, and possibly my whole people are dead. But I resonate with that. I don't see the hand of God really clearly in the moment. But I've seen him often enough in the past.
Yep.
That I can extrapolate forward and say, he's still at work. My God is not dead. He's still alive. He's still at work. He's still doing his thing. So when he sends me out, he's sending me out to something where he's already at work. I'm not going to a fresh work site. I'm going to a site that, but that still requires courage. Because you just, at the end of the day, you know, you just can't prove it. Right? You just can't say, you know, like, give me 6 months and I can look back and go, yeah, that was, see, I can see God's fingerprints now, but in the moment, not so much.
And you like to think, like, those little decisions you make every day of, oh, I'll go and talk to this person about Jesus or whatever it is. Like, okay, sure, he doesn't give you this really clear word. When the stakes are a little bit higher, like which job to choose, which house to buy, who to marry, all of that, you think, like, oh, I'd like to hear a little bit clearer. But no, when your life is on the line, you still might not hear, and you've just got to jump out in faith.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that comes down as well to the importance of those small steps of courage. Right? Because, you know, if you don't make the small steps of courage where the stakes are low, it's like learning, right? Like, you're not ready. When you first start learning a skill, you're not ready for the ultimate test, right? You're not ready for level 10. But if you don't start with the challenges of level 1, you'll never be ready for level 10.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something really powerful about making those small decisions, being able to look back and go, yeah, God was with me in that, and I can see his hand in that, and I can see that he went ahead of me. And right, because that's, again, the story. Like, Esther is named queen, and then there's 5 years before the action takes place. So for 5 years, she was left with a, I don't know why I'm queen, right? And she wasn't queen because of a prophecy or, you know, it was just like, I'm queen now. So that's good, I guess.
Sick.
And in 5 years, like, what are you doing? And then all of a sudden there's this moment, you're like, oh, so God went before her, like 5 years before, he was already at work creating a scenario where she was in that royal position for such a time as this. But again, for 5 years, you're not sitting there kind of going, oh, I wonder what God's got me here for. You know? Oh, it's to avert a genocide. Right. You know, so how you do that, I think, in life is really important.
Just a side note, these guys are idiots.
Which guys?
The king, everyone.
Yes.
They're so dumb.
I think it's...
Can we just put that out there, that the women in this story are the only ones that have their heads screwed up?
Well, does that surprise us?
The girl at the party's like, I'm not going to walk into that room of drunk men. Yeah, very smart decision. Well, not folly to me. That's intelligence.
I would say, though, that Vashti, Mordecai, Haman, and the king are all... They all fall into the same category.
As the women.
Well, no, like Vashti's the queen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, who must not be named her.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But she's like Esther, because Esther and Vashti don't really have a lot of power.
Yeah.
But Vashti kind of tries to hold this really hard line, and it ends badly.
Yes.
In part because of the extreme folly of those who are overseeing them. And I think that's also why it spoke volumes to, why the book spoke volumes to Jews living outside of Judea, because they were called to be faithful where there was, in some cases, an oppressive government.
Mm. Yeah.
Very powerful people who could make their lives really miserable. And how do you navigate faithfulness when you've got really powerful but not necessarily wise people? Like, you've got to be really careful. And Esther seems to navigate that. So unlike Daniel, you know, Daniel does that whole thing, I'm not eating your food. I'm not eating the king's food. And Esther just kind of rocks up and goes, okay, so I'm going to eat the food. I'm going to have the beauty treatments. So I'm going to sleep with the Gentile king. And then if that doesn't work, I'll just be a concubine. And the king, and she doesn't kind of do that whole, I'm taking a stand, throw me in your fiery furnace, but I'm not going to do it. And there's an element, I think, where that's an important part of the story, where Esther, one commentator describes it as a steering a canoe from the front. Now, I'm not much of a canoe person, but you like normally steering a canoe is much easier from the back.
Yeah, sure.
You can steer a canoe from the front. It's just harder work. And the commentator made the point that Esther really navigates that in a different way. Like Mordecai does the whole, I'm not bowing down, and nearly costs his entire people their lives.
Yeah.
Vashti says, I'm not showing up, and nearly, well, and costs hundreds of women, you know, their future.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
but Esther plays the game, doesn't she?
She's trying to be, and she exhibits wisdom and discretion. So Mordecai says, don't tell anyone that you're Jewish. No reasons given. He just says, don't. And she's like, okay. And so she doesn't. She asks Haggai, like, okay, if you were me, what would you take in to see the king? Like, she's wise, she's discreet, she's got excellent timing. So, like, the whole come to dinner, you know, like, she knows her man, like, there'll be wine, you know? and then, you know, when she says, come back again tomorrow night, it looks like a disaster, because Haman goes out, sees Mordecai, and goes, I'm going to kill him tonight. So it almost blows up in her face. But because of that series of coincidences at the dinner the next evening, the king now knows that Jews, like Mordecai, are really faithful and loyal to him because they saved his life from an assassination attempt. And he didn't know that the night before. And so her timing proves to be, like, impeccable.
Yeah.
So you're just like, she lives this wise life. So it's like it's just a wonderful story. It's a wonderful story.
I'm a bit in love.
So.
I think we could keep talking about this, but we won't. We'll move on to question two. All right, Radar. So a big part of your kind of opening in your first person narrative was this whole idea of the fine line between folly and courage. And we kind of touched on that a little bit in our first question, but it's been asked, you know, what are your thoughts on discerning the difference between folly and courage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the problem is that, I mean, the second part of that little idiom, that little proverb, right, is that you usually only see it in retrospect. You know, so,
yeah. Oh, so. Looking back, I was a fool trying to be courageous.
I think, you know, I think we've all made decisions where we're like, you try to make the best decision you can, but then you look back and you kind of go,
that was dumb.
Yeah, it was
dumb. Can't relate. Can't relate. Don't know what you're talking about.
Jess and I can help you.
Every day of my life.
You know, where I think, you know, you with the evidence that you have, with the information you have at hand, you make what you hope is the, I mean, because to some degree, courage and folly are not really stark opposites, right? You'd say wisdom and folly, right? In that sense. But I think the official line is courage and stupidity, right? And, you know, that's
on.
You know, that whole kind of...
That I can relate to.
You do something that you hope will be like really courageous and, you know, making a stand or whatever it is, and it blows up in your face or whatever the case might be. So sometimes it is a matter of timing. You know, in terms of looking back and going, yep, that was a better decision than I thought it was, you know, which is often sometimes the case as well. You look back and you kind of go, oh, I made a decision kind of really quickly, assuming that it was the right one. And it really was. And you know, good on me. I don't know how to duplicate that. But, you know, which means, of course, that we have to have strategies in place to discern what's foolish or courageous, right? To kind of give ourselves a fighting chance. So there's an interesting proverb. I can't remember where it is in the book of Proverbs off the top of my head. But it basically says something to the effect of, there is a way that appears to be right, but in the end it leads to death. And at first that seems like basically what they're stating is, sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong. Right?
Yeah.
There's a way that looks right, and then in the end, oh well, you fell off the cliff. And but because the
problem,
and not a happy ending.
Sylvester Stallone.
I just walked into that one, didn't I?
Yeah, you really did. Yeah, you handed it to me.
I did.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And now I can't use Aragorn's "Not This Day" speech. but the Proverbs were meant to be used, right? Mm. So it's and that's not. That's not a very useful proverb to say that sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong. Like they're meant to be rules of thumb to help you figure out how to live better. And so it's one of those proverbs, and I think you need to play around with all the proverbs to figure out when you'd use them. But I think it's a proverb that begs the question, do we know the sorts of things that lead to death? Like, do we know the sorts of things that lead to death? And when you read through the rest of the Proverbs, we do.
Yeah.
Things like sexual immorality, folly, hanging around with foolish people, greed. Like, there's all sorts of things that the Proverbs outline that says, if you do these things, it leads to death. Pure and simple. Which means that when you come to the proverb of there's a way that appears to be right, but in the end it leads to death, it actually creates almost a second question, which is, how could any of those ways that lead to death look right? Like, how could you kind of say, you know, look in a situation of, you know, there's a sexual immorality option, and I go, yeah, that looks like a good decision right now. How in the world can that look good at the crossroads?
Yeah.
If I have an opportunity to gain wealth unjustly, how does that look good at the crossroads of the decision-making process?
And I guess it's what you buy with the money.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, no. I couldn't. No, yes. It would never look right.
But then another kind of part of the wider context of Proverbs is that we tend to make bad decisions when we make decisions on our own. Right? So things like a fool is someone whose way appears right to him all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Or herself, right? So I think that one of the things that proverb is leading us to is that, do you have people to help make those decisions? Right? That's one of the ways that we avoid folly and take the way of courage or of wisdom is trying to figure out, so what's the end goal? Like, what's the outcome of this?
Yeah.
And is that outcome a foolish one? And if it is, then I probably need to make a different decision. But sometimes just recognizing that, you know, our hearts can be deceitful, you know, and we can convince ourselves that just about any decision is a good decision or a courageous one or whatever the case might be. And so having godly people in our lives who can ask those tough questions, who have the permission to kind of go, is that really a good decision?
Yeah.
It is actually really quite important. So I think that, you know, one of the ways that we avoid it is having good counsel. Because left to our own devices, I don't know if this is a good decision. You know, again, in the story of Esther, you know, Vashti made what she felt was a good decision, but it ended up with some really devastating consequences for her personally and for the women of the empire. Mordecai made a decision that he obviously felt was a good decision to kind of, you know, I'm going to make a stand here. And it ended up, it ended up almost leading to the destruction of his people. So we do need others around us to kind of go, okay, is this the time? Is this the place? Is, you know, and, you know, I've talked a bit about timing. We often know the right thing to do or say. We don't often get our timing right.
Yeah.
And if you've ever done the right thing or said the right thing, but at the wrong time, it's basically the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like it just...
Pretty constantly.
Yeah. You know?
Story of my life.
Yeah. And they're the most frustrating mistakes that I make. Mm. If you do the wrong thing, you can kind of, okay, well, I did the wrong thing or I said the wrong thing and that's why it turned out badly. But it's so frustrating when it's like, I said the right thing. I just got my timing off.
Yeah.
And so it was just as bad as if I'd said the wrong thing. Like those are really frustrating. And, you know, I think we have the resource of the Holy Spirit, you know, access to the one wise God. You know, if there's anybody who knows how to get their timing right, it's God. You know, I'm always amazed at Jesus's life because he seems like a bit of a drifter in the Gospels.
Yeah.
You know, like he's just
he's
kind
a bit of a nomad.
Yeah, he's just kind of wandering around teaching people.
Just doing his thing.
Yeah, someone says, oh,
his stuff.
My servant's sick. Would you come to my house? Yeah, all right. You know, hey, let's go to the other side of the lake.
Else
you
to
know,
do.
And you're like, you're on this mission to save humanity. Mm. Shouldn't you have a more rigorous schedule? And yet there's something about Jesus where his timing is impeccable.
Yeah.
Like he knew the time to be with the crowds, and he knew the time to withdraw, and he knew the time to go and heal, and he knew the time to wait until Lazarus had been 4 days dead, and he knew the time to head to Jerusalem and die. And you know, so we, I think, have to rely on that resource as well to get our timing right. Because I think, you know, a lot of the time we know the right thing to do or the right thing to say, and it comes down to, are we doing it at the right time?
Yeah.
Those sorts of things. So those are some of my thoughts on that. I think that tension between, you know, courage and folly, or wisdom and folly, as the case might be.
So ultimately what I'm hearing is, more likely than not, I will make the stupid choice.
And in hindsight, it's the only way you're going to figure out what it
is. So get more friends and pray some more.
Okay. Yeah. Get more friends. Wow, that hit a nerve.
More wise friends?
Okay.
Is that worse?
Before you rip into me anymore, let's get on to question three.
Okay, question three. How can we manage the natural temptation to rationalize our inclination to avoid the risks of acting courageously? In other words, I think, how do we avoid our survival instincts and trust God and act courageously?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it's asking.
I am a genius.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's why you have me.
You have hit the nail on
the
head.
I'm so surprised, Matthew Willis.
Oh, my gosh. Brady, you could go home. Like, the question has been answered, which is, what was that question asking?
Sometimes there's a subtext.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's a really good question, because I think, you know, there is that, you know, to use your words, there's that survival instinct of, and not even survival instinct, we don't want to look like a fool. Mm. We don't want to make the wrong decision, particularly if that decision has consequences, you know, whatever those consequences might be. No one wants to kind of get it wrong if you can avoid getting it wrong. And so, you know, learning to step out in faith. I think I'd probably go back to what we chatted about in the first question. I think it starts with baby steps. It starts with baby steps. You know, remember, I've used this occasionally at weddings, actually, but it's The Paper. It's a 1994 movie with Michael Keaton.
A classic.
It wasn't really.
Sure.
It was a B-grade movie, but
like all classics are, really.
But it gave me a great line that I've used so many times that it was well worth the $4.99 I used to rent the DVD or whatever it was.
That just took me back to Video Easy on a Friday.
Oh, yeah. What a dream.
A beautiful time.
Yeah. So anyway, Michael Keaton plays this workaholic journalist, works at the Sun newspaper, and he's always chasing some story. And he's married to the character played by Marissa Tomei, who is pregnant with their first child, heavily pregnant with their first child, and becoming increasingly concerned that she's basically going to be a single mom because he's just never around. Mm. And it all kind of comes to a head when he arrives late for dinner at a restaurant with her and her parents. He spends two or three really distracted minutes there and then rushes off following some lead.
Man.
Yeah,
wow.
That escalated quickly. This might not have been the right decision.
I see folly here.
There may be consequences. And anyway, so she comes out on the footpath and they have this little domestic on the footpath in front of the restaurant. And he basically assures her, like, oh, I'll be there. And she says, let me give you a hypothetical. And he's kind of like, you know, now? She's like, now. And the hypothetical is, a guy breaks into the apartment, holds a gun to my head, and says to you, I either blow up the Sun building where you work, or I shoot your wife. What do you say? And he's like,
he paused.
No, he didn't pause. Okay. Apart from that whole kind of, what a ridiculous question. He goes, that's never going to happen. And then this is the money line that made the $4.99 worth it, right? Because she basically says, that's exactly my point, Henry. It's never one big dramatic decision, but it's in the vague little situations every single day, and you're either there or you're not. You keep waiting for the guy with the gun to show up, and it's going to be too late.
That's big.
And as soon as he said it, I'm like, I need to write that down. She said it, because it was that sense of, if you keep waiting for the big dramatic moment, you're not going to be prepared for it.
Yeah.
It is in those vague little situations every single day, like in the context of that marriage, right? Can you be present before the baby's born in the simple things and the little things? Can you make those decisions? Because if you can't make those little vague decisions, how are you going to make the big one?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's true when it comes to how do we prepare ourselves for those big decisions? Because we can sometimes rationalize, I think, by saying that, oh, you know, this is not a very important thing, or it's not the big decision yet. It's not that we're looking for drama in our lives, but we kind of go, oh, it's not that important. It's not the dramatic decision, right? It's not this black and white moment where I'm sure I'll be good then. You know, if that situation happened to me, I'd do the same thing. And I think what I would say is the way that we avoid rationalizing in those bigger moments, because, you know, obviously when we come to the moment, we're like, oh, listen, you know, kind of what Esther's.
I'm actually washing my hair that day.
Well, you know,
I'm really sorry, guys.
A little bit of Esther's back and forth with Mordecai.
Yeah.
Like, I can't go see the king. Like, that's certain death. And he's like, maybe you should go do it anyways. And he's like, okay. You know, like, there's that kind of moment of.
Heavy.
You know, but there's that moment of, oh, no, that can't possibly be me.
Yeah.
Even for Esther. Until, you know, the who knows piece. And she's like, okay, fair enough. And I'll act like I believe God's at work. So I think that we need to work on those vague little situations every single day, which tend not to require rationalization because they're not as scary. They're not as...
Stakes aren't as high.
Yeah, stakes aren't as high. And so it's easier to make the decision, because even if I get it wrong, the stakes aren't that high. The consequences aren't that great. And it's as we make those little steps of courage time and time again in those low stakes moments, I think that what we build up for ourselves is a bank of situations where we can say, I stepped out in faith and I look back and I see God's fingerprints on it. And I acted in faith and I see God's fingerprints on it. And I spoke to my neighbor and I see God's fingerprints on it. And yeah, okay, along the way, there were a few times where I said the wrong thing or I got my timing wrong or whatever the case might be. I'm good with that. But you get a storeroom of examples where God's been at work, so that when there's something a little bit more high stakes, we can go, okay, I'm a little bit freaked out by this. The consequences of this are greater. You know, this is more than an awkward few moments with my friend. This could become one of those moments where our relationship actually branches off. I don't want to lose that. You know, we can rationalize that, can't we? Oh, you know, God would want me to maintain the relationship. And we miss the opportunities to say the word that we believe that God's leading us to. The only way that we're going to, I think, have the courage in those big moments is if we've done enough of the work in the little moments, you know, to say, okay, I've done enough to look back and go, oh, God's been there before, so I'm going to step out now. And I think that that seems to me to be the best way to do it.
Yeah.
I think to pick up on question two, having friends around to help is good too, right? There is strength in numbers, you know, having somebody you can call and say, oh, I really feel God's calling me to do this. I'm not sure. I feel like I might be rationalizing this away. Can you help? Now, sometimes we have to make decisions quite quickly, but when they're high stakes, we usually have time. So what do we do? What do we do with that?
Yeah.
And so having people around us who can keep us accountable and kind of go, are you just trying to get out of something? You know? No. You know, or whatever the case
I really
be.
Do need to wash my hair.
That's true. I feel it. It's really greasy. Yeah. You know? So I think those would be the things that would be most significant to help. And maybe thirdly, because it's the big three, so that seems about right.
Nice. And we're Baptist, yeah, and right, we love three right. points.
I think it is helpful sometimes to know what we believe, right? Like, that whole sense of, I believe that God is at work and he's gone ahead of me, to kind of be reminding ourselves of that, not just in the big moments, but in the little moments, you know, like every day, God's gone ahead of me in this day and he's here with me and he's present and he's where I'm going to be. And I don't spend any part of this day alone. You know, when the stakes are low, that repetition of theology, right? And good theology, I've often thought, is not, you know, really fancy terms and ideas. It's when our thinking and belief about God intersects real life. Right? That's good theology. It's worked out practical theology. And knowing what we believe about God having sent us or having empowered us with the Holy Spirit, or, you know, has been given to us to teach us and to remind us and to give us the words to say. And, you know, those sorts of kind of reminders of what do I believe help us then walk by faith in those moments. So,
and being familiar with stories like Esther, if for her, why not for us?
Yeah.
Kind of vibe. Of,
yeah.
Yeah. She was courageous and God followed through.
Particularly with the whole who knows. Like, I look at the situation, I'm like, I can't see the hand of God clearly in this at all. And you're like, well, neither did Esther, and she did a much bigger thing than you about to.
And
like,
so suck it up and get on with the job.
Yeah. Esther up. You
know? So. Love that.
Oh my gosh. Hashtag, you guys. Make it a trend.
There's three people a trend?
No, that's so good. And do you know what? That whole, like, those little steps, like, really, yes, we can apply that to courage, but we can apply that to any and every aspect of living, you know, a life following Jesus. Yeah. Like, I've heard you talk about that in terms of generosity. I've, you know, I've heard you talk about that in a number of different ways. Yeah. Like, so really, yes, it's for courage, but it's just for faith as well. And just identifying that one small step today that you can take. And maybe that's a courageous step. Maybe it's a faithful step. Maybe it's a generous step. You know, but, and I guess that's what following Jesus looks like. Just a whole bunch of baby steps rather than, you know, leaps and bounds.
It's wisdom, because it's kind of how God made the world, right? So every area of life, whether it's a faith, part of our faith life or not, you don't just jump to level 10, right? Like, it's, you've always got to learn. Everything is small baby steps. And sometimes I think we assume that somehow I'm a Christian and so I just ought to be able to
I'm on
do
level
that
10.
Stuff. It's
well,
I don't know that that's necessarily fair. You know, maybe in the moment we have this, you know, empowerment of the Spirit and we do something that's well beyond us and we kind of go, I don't know where that came from. Like, fine. But the normal process is small steps of faithfulness, small steps of faithfulness, small steps of faithfulness leads to the capacity to take those bigger, more substantial steps.
Yeah, so. Right on. Well, what a great challenge to end on. Mike, thanks so much for joining us again for the big three, coming back.
I know, it's great. It's
after
great.
A long break.
I've missed it.
I've missed it too. Yeah. Oh, you guys.
It's really kind of swarmy in here right now.
Well, we'll catch you next
week. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Jess Baker.
Matthew Willis.
A lot was in that. We covered a lot. We really delved into Esther's story and why she's just a boss lady.
Yeah, what a banger.
With a power suit, just strutting into that royal court with something to say, something to do. But then also kind of unpacked how we can make stupid decisions. Wild. No one's ever told me that before. But also then how we kind of step into courage. What, like, for you, what was the take home? What's the piece that you're like, oh, that's going to sit with me, you know, this week or even longer?
I don't think I would have picked up, because I don't know my Old Testament scripture that well. I wouldn't have picked up that God, like, wasn't explicitly said throughout the story. And then they pray, and then because of God's favor, and, like, I just wouldn't have picked up those tiny little ends of sentences that are missing. And so to know, like, Esther stepped out in faith.
Yeah.
And she didn't have any idea. Like, you do think when it counts in those big moments, it will be obvious and you will hear from God. And so you'll be able to do whatever you need to do. But actually, no. And that's okay. And that's what faith is.
You kind of assume, don't you? Like, I think, you know, you're reading scripture
And so your brain almost fills in the bits that are missing.
Obviously that was God. Yeah.
Yeah. Like fasting and they prayed. Yeah. Like it's not there, but we just kind of place it in there because we assume. But yeah, when you actually look at it and look at her story and what she did, yeah, she was just like, she's just having a crack.
Yeah, absolutely love that people were like, well, that obviously was there, so they just added it in. Love that for us. Can we see a dramatized version of the whole Bible, please? Wow.
That's Raiders. That's next week.
Next week in a dress, Raider playing Esther. Please, just robes. Please.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, it's good to be back, my friend.
Yeah.
It's good to be back. We'll be back next week as we continue in this series, The Courageous Life.
Mm-hmm.
Look forward to seeing you then.
Mm-hmm.
We'll catch you next time.
See you later.
If you want to be a part of the conversation, head to slido.com, a live forum where you can submit your own questions or upvote someone else's. Then listen out in new episodes for the answer. Check our show notes for the Slido code. Today's episode was in response to the sermon preached at Gymie Baptist Church during our Sunday services this past weekend. You can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. You can also listen to the We Are the Church podcast, where we hear the stories of faith from those within our GBC community. You can find both of those podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. Thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.